Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one. We got a great group.
Hey, we're going to have a lot of fun this morning. And today's episode is brought to you by ARC, American Reprographics Corporation. If you print with it, print on it, or simply want it printed, check out the folks at arcinatlanta.com. Or better yet, reach out and ask to speak with Mindy Godwin personally. You can reach her directly at 770-394-2465. All right, first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast fashion designer with Caroline Ann, Miss Caroline Reuter. Good morning.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, Caroline, we're excited to learn about your story and how you got into this, but tell us about the collection.
Yeah, so I just launched my own women's wear line this year. It's a collection of really like effortless and easy, sophisticated pieces for women to wear for special occasions or their everyday life. We really live by the brand philosophy that today is an occasion worth dressing for. So being able to take, you know, just a special piece, and that's a means to make your day even more special, that, you know, you can just wake up, roll out of bed, get dressed, and what you're wearing is what really can elevate your day and take it to a great place.
So now, how'd you get into the kind of fashion world as a young person? Were you always kind of drawing and sketching? Was this kind of lifelong passion of yours?
Yeah. So I think growing up, I was always super into fashion, clothes, style, anything like that. When I was a kid, I used to make dresses out of Kleenexes for my Barbie dolls. And I always say, like, that's what should have tipped my parents off right away. No, but growing up, like when I was in high school, I took some business classes and became really passionate about business. So that's what I chose to major in undergrad. And about halfway through my college career, I was like, you know, like I love business because it's fast and competitive, but I'm just really missing that creative piece. And if I'm going to be honest, all I've ever really wanted to do in life is fashion. So pretty much the day after I admitted that, I started teaching myself how to sew out of my teeny tiny room in the sorority house at the time.
So it wasn't until college you started sewing and actually creating?
Yeah, I had never sewn a garment until halfway through my junior year of college.
So just conceptually, you liked the idea of fashion, but you hadn't really done fashion.
Yeah, because growing up, it always looked like it was from more of like a personal style standpoint. Like I loved shopping and really, you know, putting together great outfits and stuff. But, you know, because it was always that piece of like, oh, well, fashion design, being a fashion designer, like who actually does that? You know, I didn't see it as something that was possible until it was like, okay, I feel like I can't live without this.
What was the catalyst for that? Was it like the Project Runways and those kind of reality shows where you see it actually happening?
I did grow up watching those, but it was actually my junior year of college. I was at a career fair. And so, you know, I'm just like walking up and down the halls of like the different booths and stuff of the company.
And you were a free agent. You were thinking, it could be anything catches my eye.
Totally. Right. I was super open. I'm a very curious person. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take much for me to be interested in something and be able to kind of latch on and want to know more. But it was a huge red flag for me because I was, you know, at this career fair and I was like, oh, no. None of these things are doing it for me.
Were you getting like panicked? Like, oh,
yeah, I was like, something is wrong, you know? Yeah, because I was like, I wanted to get a great internship for that summer and then hopefully go into my senior year with a job and, you know,
and you're
be able to
on a
call
path.
It a day, right? Yeah, and you're on a path because I like structure. I like knowing what's going to happen. And so I was like, okay, wow, this is really surprising. But, you know, the second I admitted to myself that I was like, I really want to do fashion and I really want to have my own business, it was like this giant sigh of relief.
So then at that point, you're like, okay, so now I believe I can do this. Like, were you, you mentioned that you kind of had looks and you liked kind of putting things together. Were your friends saying, hey, make me this, or can you help me with this? Were you that kind of person in like high school and college?
In college, it was like when I decided that I wanted to start teaching myself how to sew, I would take pieces out of my closet and kind of pattern off of that. I was living in this tiny room with a roommate. we're still best friends to this day. And so she had a front row seat to all of this. And we laugh about it from time to time. Cause I used to, at one point I had a dress form in our room that she, you know, you would come in late at night when all the lights are off that and would she would you. Think it was a real person. It's like, no, that's just mine. Sorry. but I would take pieces out of my closet and she would go downstairs for tutoring every Wednesday night. And I would literally lock myself away in our room and I'd be like, you're not coming out until you figure out how to take this fabric, cut it up, sew it up, and it turns into something. And that was kind of, you know, there was no time to think about it. It was just due because, you know, I felt like I was kind of on the clock because right. It was midway through my junior year. I was like, you know, it's time to figure this out. It's do or die. So then I started creating those garments and I would wear them to our weekly chapter meetings for our sorority.
And these were created, you were taking existing things and then kind of
I was actually going and buying like brand new fabric.
So, yeah. So you're doing it from scratch.
Trying to cut from scratch.
And then were you like watching YouTube videos to make it?
No. I was pretty much like sewing. I would take a shirt or a dress or something that I liked and I would model off right. of that. I would figure out, okay,
this is how they put the seam.
Yeah. What? I'd be like, I think a sleeve pattern looks like this, which if you've actually seen a sleeve flat pattern, it's probably nothing like what you would actually expect, you know? Right. So it's a lot of trial and error, but, after, you know, figuring out enough that I could actually have a physical garment, I would wear it, but I wouldn't say anything. I would just, you know, kind of gauge feedback and see if people said anything.
Was that because there was fear, like how people don't like it, or was it because you went to people's unbiased opinion?
I think, yeah, it was more like an experiment. It was like, okay, this week I'm going to try wearing something, you know.
That you made.
Yeah,
right.
A top and skirt that's from the store. And then the next week I'm going to try to wear a dress that I made and see right. if there's a difference in, you know, feedback I get about it. And like, hands down, I would always get way more positive feedback about something that I had sewn, which was really interesting. So that was really cool.
So it gave you confidence pretty quickly?
Yeah, it was really cool validation to have off the bat. And it's like even sitting here like telling that story now, I'm like, I can't believe that happened. Like that's awesome.
It is awesome. And that's the belief in self-confidence that you had to put it out there. I mean, a lot of people keep that in their head and they never actually, like Seth Godin says, ship. They never actually mm-hmm. take that step to make it real. It's always that. It could be, maybe. But then I want to put it out there in case somebody says, oh, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think when you decide you love something, you just have to get it good enough so that you can get it out there. And, you know, we do stuff like that with the business today, you know, whether it's trying out something new on our website or, I don't know, just different like ideas and things that we'll put out there. It's like you just got to get it good enough to go and don't think about it, you know, because if you sit there and you hesitate, you know, I think that ultimately leads to inaction, which I think just doing something is better than doing nothing.
Right. Now, who do you create for? Is it for yourself or the people who like your stuff?
I think it's some of both. You know, I think I really design from the standpoint of what an ideal wardrobe might look like for myself, but I really want to give that to other people. 'Cause I always say, like, I love looking dressed up, but I don't like feeling dressed up. You know, that kind of like constrictive feeling that can sometimes come with like, you know, a particular like cocktail dress or something. You know, it's like, I don't think that's fun. It's like, I want to look great, but I don't want my clothes to be fussy. So it's like, I want to give people a really, you know, interesting perspective, but still be able to feel comfortable.
Comfortable, right.
Yeah.
So now, how did you go from designing for yourself, you know, in college to like, did you mentor underneath somebody or apprentice underneath somebody, or did you just kind of go boldly forward with your own line and this is where we're at?
Yeah. So, the next step I took was I started teaching myself how to sew. And then, you know, immediately it was like, okay, what's the next step? 'Cause I want to know what I'm shooting for. And I grew up here in Atlanta, not too far from where we are today. And I knew SCAD was here in Atlanta. And I was like, okay, I can finish out my college career with my marketing degree, the business experience, but I feel like I need to go get more of the fashion piece.
More formal training.
Yeah. It's like I'm self-taught in sewing, but I feel like I should probably go get some more background in that. So I knew SCAD was here in Atlanta. So I was really, you know, teaching myself how to sew and building up a portfolio with the hopes of being able to get in. And I did. So I actually just graduated with my master's in fashion last fall, almost exactly a year ago.
So now the intention was, though, to always have your own line. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to, I'm going to get a job and work for a big line that already exists.
Yeah, I really wanted to be independent as soon as I could. And I think entrepreneurship is something that's been modeled to me and my family. I'm actually a fourth generation entrepreneur, I think. So it's like, you know, I've seen that modeled to me. My dad has his own business. So it's like, I loved being able to see that sense of independence.
Your vision, make it happen. Right.
Yeah.
So now, was there an event that happened that kind of took you to the next level, as we discussed pre-show?
Let's see. So when I got to SCAD, one of the first projects I took on was creating this dress out of, well, okay, I'll back up. So it's like, you know, SCAD has a career portal that you can go on and look for jobs and stuff. And there's this one freelance job. I think this was like my second quarter there that really caught my eye. They wanted somebody to create a red carpet gown using Vanity Fair napkins, which is one of Georgia Pacific's product lines. They were sponsoring.
They make napkins.
Yeah.
Right.
They were sponsoring the project for a Susan G. Komen fundraising gala. And I don't know, for whatever reason, it just totally leapt off the page at me. And I was like, this job is for me. I have to do this.
Well, you said you started making dresses for Barbie with tissue. So this wasn't that big of a leap, right?
Yeah, I guess,
you already had a lot of practice.
Exactly. That, you know, childhood dream coming out. Just had to do it, you know, all over again. So I was like, yes, I have to do this. Meanwhile, you know, I still have like no formal sewing experience. So why I thought I could do this, I don't know. But again, it was one of those things that was like, you just start doing it and keep going and don't stop. And, you know, cause if you stop, then you get scared. Mm. But, you know, cause I had like a month to do it and my idea was like super ambitious. So, it took about a month to do, and I would post these progress updates and stuff on my social media, because pretty quickly I separated out and started a design account for my work, so I wouldn't, you know, be blowing up my personal feed with that kind of stuff every
day. And because you were trying to make a name and a personal brand for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was definitely using it like a portfolio. So I would post these progress updates of the dress, and, you know, people would get so excited about it. They would ask me, like, in person, they were like, so how's, like, the napkin dress coming along? And it just kind
of... So we got a name now?
Yeah, it had its own name. It really took on a life of its own, is just the napkin dress. And it's still one of like my signature projects. We have it on our website. We've got some photos of it if anybody wants to see that. But yeah, so from there.
So that won the contest or?
So it was a freelance job. So, I mean, I got paid, which was pretty cool. I got paid to make a dress out of paper, you know.
Was that your first time you got paid?
Yeah. So that was awesome. that's always a good feeling. And from there, since it was all over social media, Vancouver Fashion Week found me from there. They were like, oh, we saw the napkin dress. Like, we want to have you come out and show
a
collection.
Were you calling it the napkin dress, or did the kind of the market call it the napkin dress?
Both. I think, you know, that was like the most intuitive name, because people would see it and just see a photo of it and think that it was fabric.
Right. They wouldn't know it's a napkin unless they kind of got close to it, right?
Yeah. I had a friend do some really great photography of it, and, you know, it's white, so it looks like a wedding dress. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to tell people, no, it's made out of paper.
Paper, right.
Mm-hmm.
So then from there, you started getting attention?
Yeah.
And then did that impact your college experience at SCAD?
I think I always went into SCAD with the mindset of, hey, like, I'm starting my business while I'm here.
Right.
I'm not
it wasn't
just,
like, I'm going to wait till I'm done and then start.
Yeah. No, I definitely did not want to wait. So I was trying to figure out how to do my program really through the lens of, hey, this is all going to be for the business once I get out of here. So, like I said, I wound up showing a collection at Vancouver Fashion Week.
So that means you had to make a collection.
Yes, which was a lot.
While going to school.
Yeah, it was 10 looks. Well, this one I actually got to do over the summer. So I had some kind of downtime because SCAD, you know, like when school is in session, is just like a mad dash to the finish.
Right? Yeah,
it's 10 weeks of just hardcore, go, go, go. And the interesting thing I learned about creative work once I got to SCAD is that, you know, like you can budget an amount of time for it. Okay, take that and then double it. And that's how long it actually takes you to get your projects done. So yeah, did Vancouver Fashion Week September of 2017. And then I did New York Fashion Week February of 2018.
Wow. Yeah. So now you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then we were full on in it. And after that show, I was like, you know, because originally I had another year of school to go after that.
Were you thinking, like, why do I have to go to school? I'm already doing all the stuff that I'd be wanting to do after school.
Yeah, yeah.
You had that conversation?
It was right at the point where it's like I could step down and spend like another quarter and go ahead and get an MA degree.
Right.
And my original plan was to do MFA. And I was like, I don't feel like I need that extra year. I would rather like put that money into the business. You know, I was like, I feel like I'm ready.
Because you were getting so much momentum. I mean, that's why you're going to school, is to get these opportunities.
Yeah. So I felt like I had good momentum. I felt ready enough. And we were like, okay, let's take the plunge and do it. I'm going to finish school early.
And then, so then you created this actual business. Now it's, the Caroline Ann Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a store or how does it work?
So we are primarily direct to consumer. So we do all of our business, online and on social media. We have had a couple trunk shows this year with Tootsie's, which is a great boutique in Buckhead. They've been really supportive of us too.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the model going forward?
Yeah. Our goal is definitely to be direct to consumer. When you're new and you're small and you're producing in small batch, your margins can be so much better when you're doing a direct to consumer model and you can kind of cut out that middleman. But, you know, it's important to have opportunities where you can physically be in front of people, because it's a totally different ballgame when people can really like see and touch and feel the clothes in person. So, you know, and again, it's been a lot of like trial and error this year of just trying to figure out like, hey, what works? What's the best way to get in front of this person? You know, so we're just kind of enjoying the ride and trying different things with that.
So now, do you have any advice for other people in the creative field that are trying to make a go at using creativity as the engine of their work to handle kind of some of the adversity or the criticism that comes their way? Because, you know, your look and your design isn't for everybody, and it, nor should it be, right? Like, you can't design for everybody. You have to kind of pick a lane and go in for that. How do you handle some of the criticism or when people, like, you love it and someone says they don't love it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely have to pick a lane, because if you're trying to do something for everybody, you're really doing something for nobody. So I think it's really important to stay true to what, you know, is really like your shtick, like what you specialize in. I think with criticism, you know, because going through SCAD and that program, it's like you get regular critique. And I think criticism in that sense is, you know, really meant to make you better. So, and I think it's kind of like a, I guess in real life, if you're trying to figure out, okay, who's the kind of person that I need to be in front of, it's like a stop-go kind of thing. If you try one environment and it's like, you know, really like not working out, kind of feels like it's pulling teeth, you know, then yeah, you probably need to change lanes and try to get in front of a different group of people.
A more receptive audience.
Yeah. And I think also it's like being honest with yourself about what's working and what's not. You know, you have to be really observant and paying attention to see, you know, hey, like, because I think it's so easy as a creative to see what you want to see and feel like, you know, yeah, your work is getting great validation from people and stuff. You know, that's always a great feeling. But, you know, I don't think you can fake that. Like, you can't make that stuff up. You have to be honest about who's really responding to your stuff.
And what's been the most rewarding part so far in the journey?
Oh, man. I think I love seeing a concept go from an idea to tangible product. That part has been super fun for me, you know, because it's taking a top or a skirt or a dress or something, and going from that first sketch, which, like, I'm still not a great illustrator, so that's not like, that's not one of like my core competencies, I guess, but it's like I can see it. Yeah, right. But I can like see it in my head so vividly. And then to actually be able to take that concept into real life and see it as that exact picture of what was in my head a few months earlier, that's something that's really cool.
Now, do you have kind of super fans that kind of buy everything that you throw out there?
Not yet. I hope to.
That's what you work towards, right?
Yeah, definitely. It would be great, you know, to have women who it's like, okay, season after season, we right. know it's like, yes, we can put together like 10 outfits for you.
Right. So now, how can we help? What do you need more of right now?
So, I would say I'd love if you would follow along on social media. I'm most active on Instagram. You can find us at Caroline Ann Collection. That's Ann with no E. But, you know, we do a lot of posting and sharing about the collection, events, what's going on. A lot of the times I'll share like day-to-day things there as well. So yeah, that's been kind of also fun to share the process of how all of that works. And then of course our website, which is CarolineAnnCollection.com. We're over there as well, which you can shop all of our products, collections, all the things. So.
Well, congratulations on the momentum and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Hey, how about staying with us? We got a couple more guests we're going to visit with.
Definitely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, personal brand strategist with Brand Builders Group, Miss Elise Archer. How are you?
I'm doing so good. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. We are delighted to have you. Before we do get started with your segment, though, what did you learn in that last one?
You know, one of the things that I learned was just going for it. And this is something, Caroline, that I appreciated about you when you were kind of looking at, do I stay in school longer or do I just go for it? It was like at a certain point, you just have to take a leap. You just have to go for your dreams. And I can relate to a lot of that because I've done that some in my own career. So I love just seeing the affirmation from you of what happened for you in your own career you just took the leap. Yeah.
Well, before we get too far into things, Elise, can you tell us about Brand Builders Group? Like, how are you serving folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work primarily with entrepreneurs to help them build their personal brand. So we're a little bit unique in that we are a personal brand strategy firm. So we work with people, I would say everyone from people who have a side hustle or a concept that they know they want to create a business based off their personal brand to, we've been fortunate to work with some of the, probably the biggest personal brands in the world since we started, which is a blessing and we're super grateful for it. But I would say all of our clients, it's not just that they want to make more money and grow their business, but they also have something that's impact driven with their business, whether they want to create a change in the world or they want to, you know, do something charitable with their business. And so all of our clients are not only looking to grow their business, but also make a greater impact, which is really, really fun.
So now is there a different kind of strategy when the person is the brand rather than the business is the brand?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting, you know, when I look at the future of branding, I think personal branding is only going to get more and more important. In general, people like to follow people more than they like to follow companies. Mm-hmm. So if you think about when you're scrolling, and I don't know if you spend time on Instagram or whatever, but you're scrolling and you're going to be more likely to stop and pause when you see a picture of another person than when you see a picture of a company logo.
Unless it's the Popeyes chicken sandwich.
Unless it's that, in which case even I as a vegetarian may stop.
Somehow they've cracked the code of getting minds out the door now.
I know. But yeah, it's, you know, at the end of the day, businesses are composed of people,
sure,
right? But there are certain businesses where there's not necessarily a main face of the company. Mm-hmm. And when it's a personal brand and it's the face of the company, what you've got to do is figure out, how do you take all of your personal experience, what you're passionate about, the challenges you've overcome, and use that in a way that other people can relate to, that they form an emotional bond with, and as a result, they want to do business with your company.
Now, are most of your clients kind of creatives? Is that what their business is? Or are they also consultants or, you know, accountants? Can an accountant have a personal brand?
You know, I'm trying to think if I've worked with an accountant. I have actually done a fair amount of work in the financial services space, right, yet to work specifically
with an accountant. Like, I can see wealth manager, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of celebrity wealth managers, but somebody that's in, like, kind of a professional service, but, absolutely, you know, they have to differentiate themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say any business where your reputation matters. Mm-hmm. Which at the end of the day, personal branding is really about what your reputation right. is. It's what other people think of when they think of you. So certainly we work with a lot of coaches, consultants, authors, speakers. But we do work a fair amount in the professional services space, mortgage, real estate. Like I said, I've kind of stumbled into doing a lot in the financial world, which I never thought I would, but I love my financial advisors and have fun. And for them, reputation is everything. And they've got to figure out in any industry, you've got to figure out how do you stand out? Right. Sally Hogshead says different is better than better. And that's one of the main things today that I think as a business owner, you need to be thinking about is not so much how you can you be better than somebody else, because that's a hard game. You're always going to have someone who's quote unquote better than you. But it's more about how are you different and how can you use that to kind of rise above the noise.
So now how do you help the that individual that you're serving kind of create that point of differentiation? Like how do they? It has to be authentic, right? There are certain must-haves, right? It has to be authentic. It can't be some pretend thing that they're just doing because they want to be different in that area, and that seems like a hot area, right? Yes. That's never going to be able to be sustainable.
Yeah, and I don't work with clients who want to take that approach just because it's kind of like, you know, you see a lot of people online teaching you how to become an internet millionaire, right. And yet they
and
have
then they
never...
live at their parents' mm-hmm. basement, right?
Yes. And it's just, there's a lot of that online.
Well,
right?
The fake it until you make it is not a new phrase.
It's not a new phrase. It's not a new phrase. And look, there's some truth to that, right? But it's also not being deceptive. It's, you know, when I was here last time, it was a couple of years ago, I was in a different industry. I was in sales coaching, and the way I became successful in that industry was by marketing myself and putting myself out there. But I was never dishonest about my background or my experience. And it's the same here. I mean, Brand Builders Group is only a year and a half old now. A lot of us used to work together at our old company doing sales coaching. We had to leave and start over and build completely new brands. And we are very upfront that it is a newer company, yet we also are really good at what we do. So right. it's about owning your experiences, owning who you are, and then figuring out how can you leverage those to really help and support other people.
So now, how does somebody know they need your service? Is it something that they aspire? Man, I wish I had more clients. I don't think my brand is resonating. Like, what's the pain that they're having? Because I'm sure a lot of people out there, especially in professional services, or they're creative and they're just frustrated with it's not happening as fast as they'd like it to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think lack of revenue is a key indicator.
Well, that's not good for you.
Yeah.
Unless you're very generous in your business model.
Well, one of the things that we say is you don't have a revenue problem. You have a reputation problem.
Right.
And that reputation always precedes revenue. So that's at the end of the day, like it's true, right? Reputation always precedes revenue. But I think one of the challenges that people run into is when it's your own personal brand, you're so close to it that you just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually work with a number of clients who are in the marketing space who are brilliant at marketing and branding their clients and right. other people. But when it comes to you, it's hard to see those things that make you really unique, that make you different, that are your genius areas, that are your superpowers that other people look at and think are amazing. And you're like, well, I just do that every day.
Right.
It's not a big deal.
I just take it for granted. It's not.
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody do that?
Yeah. Right. So lack of clarity on what someone's brand would be or how do they, like we said, take it to the next level is usually one of the things that we help people with because it's just so hard to do it for yourself.
So now what is kind of those first interactions with a prospective client look like?
Mm-hmm.
So are you kind of identify what their superpowers are or help them identify, right?
Yeah.
There could be wrong, right? They could think like, oh, this is what everybody should know me for. And you're like, what are you crazy? It should be this. It's obvious.
And that
does that happen?
It happens quite a bit. Yeah. You know, I would equate building a personal brand to building a house. And one of the things that costs people a lot more time and money than they need to spend is not having the blueprint for the house they're building. So by the time a lot of clients come to me, often, not always, but often, they've already invested in a website, social media. Maybe they're paying for ads and for some reason it's not clicking. They're not getting the results they're looking for. And so where we always have to start is, well, what's the blueprint? Because if you're trying to build a house without a blueprint, it's never going to work.
Right.
And so the blueprint is really looking at what is your uniqueness and what's that one word problem that you're going to be known for solving for other people, right? Because your personal brand at the end of the day, here's another mistake people make. They think it's about them and it's not about them. It's always about the person you're serving. So you've got to be super clear on what's the problem that your brand solves for other people, not just what are you passionate about. So getting really, really clear on what's the problem you solve, what's your business model going to be if it's not in place yet, What's your scale? What's your plan going to be to scale? What's your content strategy going to be? And really getting that blueprint together before they start spending time or money on executing it.
Doesn't the time have to be spent on really being clear of that first thing you said? Mm-hmm. Like when Caroline was saying, I want my clothes to look good, but I want them to be comfortable. That to me was a clear distinction mm-hmm. about clothes, right? That's her way she described her kind of uniqueness.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's
but
just
how much time, like that just didn't one day, like, yeah, that's what we're going to be. Like this.
Well, I don't know. She's pretty good.
But I would imagine most people would have a hard time getting to that level of clarity.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're in a very, when you have dedicated time set aside for it, it can happen fast. And mm-hmm. so for our clients, when I'm working with the client and building out their whole blueprint, it's a 2-day process. We're together for 2 days. We build the whole thing out. There's some magic that happens when you create the space to just be available. And what I like about it is when I'm working with a client, all they have to do is just be available for me to ask them questions. And it's my job to figure out.
So you're just peppering them with questions.
Yeah.
Like what are some of the questions?
Oh, gosh. I mean, some of the questions in terms of figuring out their uniqueness would be things like, what do other people say is your superpower? What, you know, what ticks you off? What gives you joy? What lights you up? What do you enjoy spending your time doing? Because when you're building out the business model, you know, some clients, they're okay traveling and being on the road and maybe they want to coach and they're okay doing the dollars for hours thing. But a lot of my clients don't want to do that. They want to have passive revenue streams. They want to scale. They want to be able to hit 6 figures, 7 figures, 8 figures and not have to be on all the time to make the money. And so it's really just looking at what would serve people, but then also what aligns with who you are mm-hmm. as well.
And then, so once they get that clarity, then you put an action plan into place. Like, when does your job begin and end? Like,
well, hopefully is it never ends.
So it's not just about the strategy. It's also the implementation as well.
So we have an in-house agency. We only work with clients who we've done strategy work with. But for clients who have gone through our strategy process, we can help with the whole thing. Everything from building the website, building funnels, running ads, helping them build their keynote, their podcast, mm-hmm. growing a team, scaling. So yeah, we do the from inception to our fourth phase, we call 8-figure entrepreneur. We, in our past business, we built it to an 8-figure consultancy. So we know how to get someone there if they want to go down that path. So right. we can help all along the way. But some of our clients just want the strategy and they've got a great team behind them already. And they want to go out and have their social media team or their web team go out and execute. And that's cool too.
Now you mentioned this specific venture is fairly new mm-hmm. in terms of time, but you've been doing this kind of work for years, obviously. Yeah. Any story or success story you can have where you took somebody from kind of to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that's really fun for me is helping my clients get super clear on who their ideal client is. Again, just remembering that your personal brand, it's like, it's not about you. You want to be really clear on who is that person that you're serving. And we call them an avatar. Some of your listeners who are in marketing probably know that terminology. So who's your customer avatar? Mm-hmm. And I was working with one of my clients who's a coach last year, and we were getting super clear on for her, for the next phase of her business, who was her avatar? Who did she want to work with? And her clients previously, she'd loved working with them, but finances were a struggle. They just weren't as far along as she was really feeling called to serve people in right. this next phase of her business. So we created her client avatar and got super clear on what does this woman look like? What does she sound like? What did she make? What's her life circumstance? And I think it was 2 weeks after we completed that session, she got a new client that was literally that avatar all the way down to the name. And it was a very unusual name as well. And this person reached out. She said, your marketing just really resonated with me. I wanted to talk to you. And so it was very cool to see how that level of clarity and focus can create results fast. It doesn't have to take a long time. And, you know, our clients, they're getting, one of our clients came in and he's very well-known public speaker. He was already, getting well into the 5 figures for his fee, but we were able to come in and work with him on his keynote. He left and was instantly able to triple his fee. So there's exciting stories like that all around. And again, I think it's just giving yourself the space and the support that you need to take your brand to the level you want to bring it to.
Now, what about you personally going from that kind of shift from being in sales and mm-hmm. sales training to now, you know, people are looking at your personal brand and they're saying, hey, how's Elise doing?
Yeah.
You know, you got to kind of walk the walk.
Absolutely.
How has that changed things?
It's been a really interesting. Yeah. It's been a very interesting ride. So about
If you need a fashion designer, I know someone.
You know someone? Yeah, I may need some. Yeah. You know, a year and a half ago when I exited my old company, part of the deal was that they owned all the social content I'd created during that time. So I had been very intentional.
That's a pro tip for someone, right? Maybe not do that.
It's like hindsight is 20/20, right. And that was the contract I signed. So that was fair. But I'd been very intentional about building a personal brand in the sales coaching space. Mm-hmm. And when I left, I had to take everything down. And right. So I had this very strange, bizarre experience of going from feeling like I was super visible and getting inbound right. leads for sales clients every day to all of a sudden I felt
it's
invisible.
Like, right, from scratch
almost. It was so hard. Yeah, it honestly, emotionally was very hard. And it was a couple of months of kind of figuring out, if I'm not going to be known for this anymore, what am I going to be known for? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I thought I picked a lane. Now I got to pick another
now
lane.
Now I got to pick another lane. Yeah. And it was intimidating and it was scary. And for someone who likes to be visible and likes to create content, to feel like you're no longer.
So there was a period where there was doubt and fear.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right? And
absolutely.
You were like, what have I done? Or
every
where
day.
Am I at?
I still have that pop up. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But
how'd you kind of power through mm-hmm. that? Did you have some support around
yeah.
you? Did you have people that you can kind of lean on that helped you through that? Because I would imagine mm-hmm. that for a lot of people, that could be debilitating. They could be like, you know, what am I doing? This is, you know,
sure.
this rut seems like it's getting bigger every day. It's not, you know, there's no way out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you just have to make a decision that you're not going to be stuck in any sort of struggle. Right. So that's the first thing is I made the decision. I'm not going to be stuck in this space.
So you said, I'm going to take action.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a little ironic to build a personal brand in the personal branding space. So
well,
you have to.
Table stakes in that world.
So one of the great things about my colleagues and I at Brand Builders Group is we all really helped each other rebuild our brands. And it was kind of taking a dose of my own medicine and going through the same process that I do for my clients now and figuring out what is my new brand going to be about. I had to kind of shift platforms. I'd never been focused on Instagram. I was always on LinkedIn and all right. of a sudden all my clients were on Instagram and I was like, crap.
I didn't have to learn a new one.
Yeah.
Now I got to learn a new one.
Frantically Instagramming this whole thing. But yeah, it's been great because having to go through the process of reinvention, I can relate to my clients no matter where they're at. Whether they're just starting out or whether they're looking to reinvent and kind of build a brand in a new space or a new industry. I've been there. I've done that. And I think the biggest key, this is kind of the message of my brand, is to give more of yourself mm-hmm. and that generosity is a time bender. And the more you can be visible and share what you know, even if it's not perfect, even if it's not fully polished yet, but kind of like you were talking about, Caroline, like you're just putting yourself out there and taking the next step.
And being vulnerable.
Yeah. It's been the most vulnerable year of my life. And it's actually, I was scared to share some of the challenges I was going through at first, but I feel like I've connected with so many more people. I feel like I have more empathy for myself now, mm-hmm. just kind of giving myself the grace of feeling all the feelings through the reinvention. But I'm able to help people so much more now. So that's been really, it's been a blessing.
And then now when you're doing your work, the perspective has shifted now, right? Mm. Because you're mm-hmm. going through it as well. So that gives you a way to be more effective for your clients.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's nothing a client is going through that to some extent I or my team have not been through at this point. So I think I like to think there is power in having someone aligned with you who gets what you're going through, who knows how to deal with the emotions. There's so many highs and lows on the entrepreneurial journey, as all your listeners know. But someone who's been there, done that, and gets it, I think is valuable to have in your corner.
So now what's your favorite part?
I would say, you know, I do an exercise with my clients where I help them write their bio. And it's really interesting because all the clients I work with, regardless of where they're at, they have some amazing accomplishments. And what's interesting to me is how often when we're writing their bios together, they totally leave stuff out that's incredible. You know, like I've got a client who, she's a former Miss Nevada. She's tamed lions and she just, she's cool.
Threw that
she's
in.
A cool chick.
I also tamed lions. It's like a throwaway.
And we were working on her bio and she didn't even think about these things as things that were impressive. And what happens, you know, she's maybe more extreme. There's other examples where stuff isn't quite as attention getting as that. But what happens is people don't see themselves in the light that other people see themselves in, see them in.
Right.
And so when they have that finished product of their bio that talks about like their life and their accomplishments and what they've done, and they see it from an outsider's perspective, there's tears. Like they're right. blown away by
that I
who
have,
they are.
I have made a dent in the universe.
Yeah.
I have done some stuff.
It's the coolest thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's a gift that you're giving them.
Yeah. I like to think so.
So what do you need more of right now?
Instagram followers.
More Instagram. it's all about the IG. That's what I heard.
We're going to get her some help in the next interview, right?
Look, we
That's
hope,
it.
Guys.
I got a guy. Relax.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just, I put out a lot of content. So I kind of, like I said, try to take my own medicine and share as much as I can of information that's helpful for people. So, I've got a podcast if people want to learn more about personal branding and building, how do you build an influential personal brand in less time? Kind of like we've done over this past year. People can subscribe to Instant Impact with Elise Archer. And then I also have a bunch of resources on my website, elisearcher.com. It's Elise with a Y, for some free trainings and things that I think would be valuable to listeners and would love to offer them.
So now you're out there as Elise Archer, as well as Brand Builders Group, or that's a
yes.
umbrella. So that Brand Builders Group is a collection of brand builders,
it
and you're
is.
One of them?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So we've got about, I want to say, 15 team members now, and there's a number of us on the staff who are also our own personal brands. So we're taking kind of a unique approach where we have the corporate brand of Brand Builders Group, but then we also have our own individual personal brands, and we speak, we do media interviews. Each of us has kind of a unique angle on personal branding.
Is it all Atlanta-based, or your people
no,
are all over the place?
I'm the only one in Atlanta. So we're actually based out of Nashville, and we have teams in California, in Michigan. I think that's it right now. But yeah, so we're spread throughout the country.
Generosity is a time bender. The next three times you hear me say that, Lee, I'm going to credit Elise Archer. After that,
after
I'm going to start
sorry. That's
like I always say, generosity is a time bender. No, that is fantastic. Well, I knew this conversation was going to be informative and inspiring just because we've had you on the air before, but fantastic job. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. And please continue to keep us posted on your activities.
Thank you so much. I will.
Yeah. Hey, stay with us. We got one more guest we're going to visit with. All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, bringing it all together for us, Lee, we have with us photographer, filmmaker, and CEO with Jamagine Media LLC, Mr. Jerick James, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I like how that sounded. I've never heard it said that by anybody else. Photographer, media, sound good.
All right. Yeah, we'll cut the clip. We'll sell it to you. $24.95. It comes with 8 wallet-sized pictures, keychains.
I will cash out you after the show.
So tell us about your work. How are you serving folks?
Okay. I am a photographer. I am a graphic designer. I am a writer, visual media specialist. And my whole life has been two things, create art and help people. And so when I put that together, that puts me in a position to do photography in terms of weddings, events, services, products. I have not tamed a lion. I just want to get that part out of the way. That's not in my bio.
That's a fake news.
Yeah. Bucket list. Bucket list. But yeah, I do. I try to, throughout the year, serve whatever need is as far as visuals from a business standpoint, from people, the entrepreneurs, companies. I've come in and done headshots for entire corporations for their retreats. I've done for people with product launches. I shot a pop-up gallery, pop-up shop this weekend, for example. Went straight from that shooting a maternity shoot right after that. Went straight from that to shooting like a birthday party. So I shoot a little of everything. I shoot people's lives and their businesses.
So how did you know that you were good at this? What were the clues that you've been on the right path?
I've been drawing since I was a kid. My mother says I was scribbling before I was walking. Mm-hmm. And so illustration and art has always been in my life.
I know somebody who needs help with drawing.
Okay. I can teach you. So I was doing that. I didn't get into photography until like my senior year in high school. So we had a program in high school called OEC. Like half a day, your seniors will go to like a facility and you can learn your different trades, your nursing, mechanics. I picked graphic design. Teacher had a dark room in the back. for all you newer photographers and people with digital means, once upon a time we shot with film. So I would actually go in and develop my own negatives and everything, and I got into landscape photography. And so that got me into just creating visuals from that standpoint. And it was like instant drawing, where it took me hours to draw something. I could just take a picture and, oh, okay, I'm done. So I started getting into photography. By the time I got into college, I was shooting people and just concerts. And this was around the time of like the 96 Olympics and all that stuff. So I was shooting the whole world in one place.
That was good for you.
Yeah.
That was convenient.
Yeah, really, like right there. So yeah, I just got into it. And just now, as far as the training,
when did you start getting paid?
Well, the first time you take money for doing something, that's when you're
right.
I started originally, I was doing it for friends who were like getting headshots done for just because also the movie industry was slowly moving into Atlanta too. So people that are like modeling or acting, things like that. As far as birthdays and weddings, my earliest wedding was probably like late 90s and whatnot. So I started doing.
So you were doing it in a professional manner pretty early on.
Yeah. And the problem was I tried to go to school for it, and that was not available. It was available. I went to Georgia State University. I took graphic design courses. I also tried to take photography courses. And the problem was everyone that wasn't in the art field would take photography as their minor, like their little.
The elective that they were
just
throwing.
Yeah, they're elective. And so
how hard could that be?
Right. So people that are really trying to do it, there's never any classes available when I was between my work schedule and school. So I was just, I'm kind of like self-taught. I use my graphic design training to kind of cross-train me in how to like frame up my photography and make it look commercial and whatnot. So once I felt like I had a somewhat of a style, I started like shooting events and portraits and portfolio.
So now you feel you have an aesthetic, that you have a style?
Yeah, and the thing is that always evolves with time. Like you're constantly reinventing yourself. Okay, what am I doing that no one else is doing, or what can I do 10% better than, maybe not 10% better, 10% different than the next artist? It was a lot of trends. Like for a time, there were people have their things they see in media, and they want you to shoot what they saw instead of what you are known for.
So isn't that a challenge when dealing with clients? Is like, you know, you have your vision, you're the artist, and they're like, make it look like that one.
Yeah, yeah, all
just
the time.
Do one that looks like that. And you're like, dude, that. Just take the picture like that.
You
don't need me for that.
You see Caroline nodding her head too, right?
All the time.
It's funny because Pinterest is probably like the biggest example of that. People will find something on Pinterest and like, can you do this? And in my head, in my cynical head, I'm like, so... But what about what I, you know, I'm just basically copying what someone else did.
Right.
There was a photographer, brilliant photographer and artist, Derek Blanks. He was known for the alter ego concept on Real Housewives of Atlanta. They would do they did an episode where I guess he shot them and it'd be multiple versions of themselves in the same photo. And so for a while,
everybody
was like, can you do the alter ego thing? I'm like, but. Just get him. He's in the same city. Just get him.
Right. Just call him.
So, you know, it became you're doing what everyone else is doing as opposed to establishing.
So that must
your
be frustrating
aesthetic.
From an artist standpoint, but you also got to pay the bills. So,
and it's not like 100% of what you're doing is other people's stuff. You're still shooting. When I'm shooting events, it's just me. I'm shooting like, you know, a gala or some red carpet thing. And I'm doing journalistic photography. And there's really, you're not thinking of someone else's style when you're doing events or when you're shooting weddings. You're trying to capture the moment. You got minutes to get this, you know, so you're not really thinking about that sort of thing. But when it's on a creative standpoint, where it's me on my personal time and I'm creating and the person wants to come in and shoot, that's when you tend to get those suggestions, I guess. And I'm not a problem. I can create my own style of it. But yeah, you do get those challenges.
And then now you've kind of getting into the filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking the next step in this kind of journey.
That was when I realized, oh, every Gmail account has a YouTube channel. That's when I started like, okay.
Hey.
Okay. And cameras became like just photo, but now you have a video feature on every camera.
Right.
So I started filming like little skits and
Like stuff, shorts, stuff like a minute or two, 5 minutes?
Yeah. My most recent one is my Change Your Diet series. I partner with my friend Zuri McCants, and she's a trainer. Mm-hmm. And I really started taking my health more seriously. And the running joke was I would go to a store or something and I would swear I just saw her like watching me buy like cake or something that I'm not supposed to be buying. So we decided to make a whole like video series where it's a trainer is following me everywhere I go and attacking me. And it's like, we did like 11 episodes on YouTube of just different scenarios. We did like Halloween episode where she's like Pennywise in the gym and stuff, you know. So we, so it became, and I was actually working out and like, it was it's a built-in PSA, like, you know, right. Work on, you know, I didn't know that grapes have too much sugar in them. I'm not be eating grapes like crazy. So right. I'm changing what fruits I'm eating. So, you know, it was a lesson in
so
it.
So she's ruining things for you. That's her job.
Not everything. Uh-huh. She also makes banana pudding. So that's the consolation. That's good. So it's good. So, no, but it was kind of a good way to, I'm helping people with my art and I'm right. getting into filmmaking and little skits and things like that. And then I started getting into writing scripts for bigger projects. Most recently, I did a premiere in March for my, technically it would be my fourth film. And it was just a bunch of friends and fellow actors that I put together. I wrote it, directed it. I'm in it. I'm doing stunts. I'm like shooting. I'm doing as much as I can and navigating 20 plus people in this story. It was like a sequel to three other films. It was called Fixed. And we had a premiere in March. I saved up from gigs I was doing and I rented out a theater and had a whole, I wanted the whole wow. theater premiere experience.
Wow. Good Carpenter's. For you.
So yeah. Thank you.
So you made it real. So now, is that where you're going to spend more of your time? You want to do more of that?
I want to balance that between my services and that. And mm-hmm. that's the new challenge. It's like,
there's only so much time.
Yeah. I'm shooting events. I'm shooting gigs and I wrote one scene today. Like, okay. I want to work more than one scene. So it's been, you know, preparing. I have a stylist, Anastasia Southwick, and she's doing, the costumes for the cast for the next film. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like an action comedy. So I meet with her every so often. Okay, this is what this is going to look like. So chip away at the thing you want to do every day, or at least try to, while providing your services. And then you should be able to find a balance to get everything done.
And then any kind of lessons for that creative person that's out there with the dream, but maybe doesn't have kind of this kind of initiative that you have to just, you're just making things happen at every stage. It seems like you're really going all in. And trying to learn and do the work and not just kind of dreaming about it.
Consistency. Just stay consistent because it's easy to just kind of like fall back. I've had those moments where I didn't give up. I just, how do I figure this out? Sometimes when you have a bunch of challenges, and I don't call them problems. I always say challenges. Challenges can be overcome. So when you have a bunch of challenges in front of you and you're trying to figure out the steps, you see the end, but you're trying to figure out the steps. Consistency is how you get those steps figured out. Like, just start.
Just do the work.
Yeah, just do the work.
Every
just
day, do the work.
Out, write it out. What's in front of me? What's the solution? And it's a solution to everything, you know.
So now, who's your ideal client right these days?
Actually, it's people that I look back and I've had years of working with them. Like, at the stage I am now, I've been shooting for 26 years. And now with Jimagine Media, it used to be called Jimagination Photography, and people would always misspell it. And so I was just like, let me clean it up. Let me just take my Instagram name. And, you know, so I look back at the people that I've been working with and like, oh, I've been shooting with this person for like 8 years. And those are the people that I'm like, I feel like are my ideal clients because they speak to the consistency of
right.
what
they
I've been trying to do.
They get you. They like you. They yeah. hire you. So let's work with them more.
Yeah. I shot a family event and they had like a little 8-year-old kid. Well, I didn't know he's 8 at the time. And I recognized his face. I'm like, how old is he? He's 8 years old. I shot his first birthday. So I've been shooting with this one family. And it's like multiple year. People. This girl, I did some fashion content for her website. And I shot with her when she was like 19 coming in college. And now mm-hmm. she's married, running a business and everything. So it's like the people that have been just with me this long, that's right. my ideal. Like they get it. They get what I'm bringing to the table.
So now I'm going to open up the floor a little bit. How about at least some advice for him on his personal brand? Because his work and his personal brand are kind of the same, right?
Yeah. Oh gosh. I didn't know I was going to have to give advice. Yeah.
On the spot.
This is how we roll here.
Yeah, I'll take my pen now.
Game on.
Hot seat, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, it sounds like you're doing really well. Like you're clear on who your client is. You're clear on who you like to work with. And I think that's an important part of your personal brand as well, is knowing who do I want to work with and who do I not want to work with.
Uh-huh. Sometimes you will have to burn a bridge. It's not about this. Sometimes you know who you are and what you want to deal with. And now I'm kind of like, okay, now I know don't work with this person. Stay over here.
Yeah. I did this a couple of weeks ago and it was really helpful. I made a client requirement checklist and it was not just who is my ideal client, but what are the requirements for me to work with somebody, which I think after you work with enough non-ideal clients, and I hadn't had a lot, but I'd had a couple and I was like, I need to be really clear on what my requirements are if I'm going to take on a client. And just having that out there, like while I'm on discovery calls, while I'm talking to people, has been a game changer. So
it helps make things, it's important to know where your true north is. Right.
Yeah. Cause I think the other thing too is like, you can't really serve or help people if you're not enjoying working with them.
Right.
So just knowing who would I love working with.
And that's can be a trap, especially for young people out there. They see like maybe a celebrity, a person that they think is the right person. And then the celebrity kind of can take advantage of some young creative people, especially talented ones. And all of a sudden you're like, I thought this is what I was aiming at. And this is like a nightmare.
Yeah. And you always know too. You
in
always
2 seconds,
know.
It takes a minute.
It drains. And I had this happen recently with an incredible client, but this person just, I knew way before I decided to part ways that it was no longer going to be a good fit, but I really wanted to make it work. So I kept trying to make it work and it doesn't do you a service and it doesn't help them either.
Well, Jerick, if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your work, whether it be you working in all levels of visual arts, right? It could be drawing and things like that, graphic design. It could be photography. It could be filmmaking.
Yes. You can find me on every social media platform out there. I'm mostly on Instagram at Jamagine. That's a totally made up word. Jamagine. And I'm also on YouTube as Jerick James or Jamagine. You can find me on that. JamagineMedia.com, JerickJames.com. Both links take you to the same site. You can revamp for that. And Facebook, I have a Jamagination business page. And my personal page, Jerick James, where you get all of my cynical views on life and whatnot and some photography. Also Twitter. I'm getting back to using that more. I feel like I should be active on all the platforms as often as I am, but I know Twitter was kind of the one where I wasn't, you know, I have so much I want to say and I can't fit it all in. So I'm getting better at that. So I'm on all those platforms. And, as far as just old school, contact page is on my website and it has a phone number. And so like to actually talk people and do consultations and, you know, so they can,
And then these are people who want to kind of up their visual game, right?
If they want, from a photography standpoint, if you want for your business, of course, people need to be able to identify you. So, you know, your headshots, if you have products, any of that, if you, as far as if you want people to, if you want to stand out, I guess, or get a different view as far as your business or how it looks, then that's where I feel like I could help. I also do logos, also design visuals from that standpoint.
Right. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to all our guests today for sharing their story. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.